talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. Welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Lynn Venhouse.
Lynn Venhouse is again sitting in the Michelle chair.
Thank you for inviting me.
No problem. You're our favorite fill-in. Although Michelle's not going to be back anytime soon. In fact, Michelle was killed in a kiln explosion.
With Fawn Leibowitz?
She was making me a pot. No, I'm just kidding. Michelle got one of those pesky day jobs. Mm. So she can't even call in and do the top 12 anymore, doggone it. So I'm going to have to do that. Oh, she's so much better at this than me. Top 12 over the weekend. Let's start with number 12. Number 12, War Dogs. Did you guys see War Dogs?
Yes. I did. I reviewed War Dogs for our site.
That's right. That's
yes,
right.
Yes, far more entertaining than you think.
Okay, number, yeah. That made $2.0 million. 11, No Manches Frida. Never heard of it.
That's playing at Ronnie's.
Is it?
Yeah, I saw that. So I'm assuming Spanish language film.
Yeah, I'm assuming as well. Number 10, Sausage Party, $2.3 million. Number 9, Hell or High Water, made $2.6 million.
It's been staying about the number 9 spot the last couple of weeks, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, word of mouth. Word of mouth is getting it good buzz.
Yes.
Plus rave reviews from all of his critics.
That's right. I gave it 5 out of 5, and so did you. Right, number 8, Bad Moms, $2.6 million. Number 7, Pete's Dragon, $2.9 million, despite my negative review. Number 6, Kubo and the Two Strings. That's actually doing pretty good.
I guess. Hanging in there.
What, third or fourth week? $3.2 million. Number 5, The Wildlife. That's an animated film that's getting really bad reviews, and it did not get reviewed at our site because nobody saw it. Did you see that, Lynn?
No, I did not.
It's from Belgium, I understand. First animated feature from that country.
Really?
Yes. And it looks lousy.
It does. That made 3.4. Suicide Squad is still in the top 5 at number 4, made $5.7 million. And Don't Breathe is number 3 at $8.2 million.
Got knocked down this week.
I guess so.
Yeah, last week when we were off, it was number 1 again, I believe.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's right. We were off last week. So we got a lot to talk about. Number 2 is When the Bow Breaks. I think that is an all black cast thriller.
Yes. Urban thriller.
Regina Hall is in it. And critics were not invited to review it.
Morris Chestnut also, isn't it?
A fine-looking man, by the way.
I suppose. And number 1, also a fine-looking man, Sully, which I have not seen. That stars Tom Hanks. It was directed by Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood has the Midas touch. What was his last movie? Was it?
Well, it was an American Sniper, but he did not have the Midas touch with Jersey Boys.
True,
but he had
true,
the Midas touch with the American Sniper. So
Sully made 35.5, and it overperformed, just like American Sniper overperformed his last film.
I think part of it is it's only 95 minutes. So, they were getting more screenings.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I was going to go see it at the High Point last night, but we had a plumbing emergency, so
bummer.
But you guys both saw it, so we're going to review that in a little bit. We're also going to review The Blair Witch, Complete Unknown, Imperium. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, so let's get started with our reviews. The number one movie was Sully. You guys both saw Sully. Jim, did you review it for us?
No, I did not. Kate did. And
okay.
Kate gave it a pretty positive one. I can't remember exactly how many stars. At least 4, I believe.
Okay. How many would you have given it?
I think that's a good number. I think 4 out of 5.
And did you review it for the Belleville News Democrat?
Yes,
Lynn?
I did.
How many stars did you give it?
And Webster Kirkwood Times and a Y-98.
No one said you were going to lose both engines at a lower altitude than any jet in history. This was dual engine loss at 2,800 feet, followed by an immediate water landing with 155 souls on board. No one has ever trained for an incident like that.
I did give it 4 stars out of 4, and I gave it an A in the Webster Kirkwood
Times. Did you give it a must-see on the big screen?
No. I think it is wonderful in the IMAX, but if you don't want to spring
for that.
Oh,
it's on the IMAX.
Yes.
Yes.
But the beauty of this film, besides Clint Eastwood, is a lean director. He cuts to the chase. He doesn't waste time.
Always has.
We've seen it, and he's 2-time Oscar winner, so hey. But it's like Argo and Apollo 13, where you know the outcome, but it's thrilling suspense. You're on the edge of your seat.
Well, what I didn't know, Lynn, was how Sully was kind of raked over the coals. He was celebrated so much in the media, but we didn't know that, I guess, the FAA and the flight review people and from his own airline even were thinking, hey, you could have avoided this water landing. And they were really investigating this heavily. And this is
Monday morning quarterbacks.
Yes, well, this is the crux of the conflict because we didn't know the inside scoop. And this is what is really interesting to find out, although the NTSB is now defending their response. But
they don't like being portrayed as the villains.
They thought he could make it back to LaGuardia or to go to Teterboro, and then he had to prove them wrong, and also the co-pilot. Another great thing about this movie is it shows Americans doing their jobs well. And Sully, because the kind of humble, honorable man he is, he deflects credit and he gives it to the co-pilot, the airline stewardesses, the flight attendants, and the air traffic controller, and the passengers.
And the rescue workers.
And the rescue workers. Mm-hmm. The rescue workers. And think about this at a time where Patriots Day was yesterday. A good ending with a plane in New York.
Okay. Oh, yes, yes. Well, one of the other things that they bring out is that Sully at this time was having a little post-traumatic stress because it opens with one of his nightmares where he wakes up sweating and, you know, thinking, what if I, you know, had not accomplished this? And we have a couple of sequences like that in which you get to see what he thought could have happened. Hey. And that's very well done.
Mr. Hanks good in this film? Did he get an Oscar nom?
Well, you know, I thought he was going to get an Oscar nom for Captain Phillips, but that didn't happen, and for saving Mr. Banks.
And for Bridge of Spies, perhaps.
Well, that was a longer shot than the other two.
You're right.
But yeah, I would love to see him get a nomination for this. It's certainly stellar work, and he's the main focus of the film. He's on screen maybe, what, about 85, 90% of the time?
Well, what's great about Tom Hanks is we all know and love him. He wears decency well, and this is a real American hero, but it's not a showy role. It's not flashy, and so he dials it back, which is even more effective.
Yes, yes. And as one of the articles online I saw stated, don't travel with Tom Hanks. Because Captain Phillips, Apollo 13, Castaway, things don't go well when he travels, but they go surprisingly well in this. He is terrific. Aaron Eckhart is terrific in it, too.
Oh, yes. And it's so good to see him back on screen. Now, I will say Laura Linney has a thankless role because it's the wife on the other end of the phone.
Yeah.
So it's not that much of a tour de force for an actress, but she grounds it because she's the real person. Oh, you have to stay for the end of the film because they show the real people. So you have to see it.
That's terrific. That's a lovely little bow at the end of the this present to film goers.
Yeah, so it's a flag waving tribute to hardworking Americans.
Good. Well, so Jim and Lynn both highly recommend Sully.
Oh, yeah, and if you can't see it on the biggest screen possible, do splurge. It looks great.
Okay, I'm going to see it this week. All right, let's move along. I'm going to review a movie called Imperium. Have you guys heard of this movie, Imperium?
I know that it was only playing at the Keller, right?
It played at the Keller. It premiered there. You got to watch the Keller schedule carefully.
Yeah,
occasionally they'll get a premiere, and I had seen some posters for this film, so I knew it was being made, and I knew it was going to be released theatrically. I went and saw it. It stars Daniel Radcliffe, and he plays this fellow named Nate, who's an FBI agent, and he goes undercover at the insistence of his boss, played by Toni Collette, to infiltrate a group of Nazi skinhead white supremacists who they suspect are trying to do some dastardly deed. And they are. They're trying to poison the water supply.
This is set in current time. No.
Supposedly it's based loosely on a true story that happened, within the past decade.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, it's a contemporary story. So he goes undercover and he gets in tight with these skinheads and these racists, and they walk around and they parade, and there's sort of a tense scene where he's in this skinhead parade, and this black friend of his sees him, and he's like, Nate, what are you doing? And he goes, shut up, N-word, or something like that. It's and then there's another scene where they see a Mexican guy with a white girl outside a liquor store, and they're going to beat this guy up, but then Nate throws a brick through the front of the window and sets off the alarm, so they have to run away. So that was his way of saving this couple from being beaten up by these white supremacists. They all worship this guy played by Tracy Letts, who we just saw in Wiener Dog and something else. What did we just
see? And he was in the college movie.
Indignation. Yes.
Okay. Tracy Letts plays Dallas Wolf, who's this radio talk show, racist radio talk show, white supremacist guy. And they all sort of admire him and looked up to him, and they want to team up with him. I will say this movie's really pretty lousy. Although I will say also that Tracy Letts and this Dallas Wolf character are pretty interesting. This character doesn't go where you expect him to go. You're expecting him to sort of team up with these guys, but really he doesn't. He goes to the FBI and does something you don't expect him to go, which is good. That character actually has some depth where none of the other characters do. I can't blame him for not teaming up, guys. It's like the white supremacist that can't shoot straight. These guys, their whole plan is so inept. There's no way they could have gotten away with it, even if they hadn't had an FBI agent infiltrate it.
Well, the FBI agent in it, I'm wondering, is when I heard about this, is, does he start to like these guys or something, or he's pretty much straight up?
The movie doesn't have that much depth. There's not much. You don't know anything about this FBI agent. You don't even know if he has a wife or who anything about his background. He says he's an Iraq vet, but. I think he just says that to the white supremacist guys, so they think he's got some military experience. No, this character that Daniel Radcliffe plays is very poorly written, and it's stupid. I mean, he's in this small house with all these white supremacists. Then he goes, I got to go to the bathroom. So he goes in the bathroom, pulls out his phone, and calls the FBI. I think they would have been onto this guy in about 2 seconds, but they were too stupid. No, it's poorly written. It's ham-handed. It's black and white. It's not very good. And another thing that bugged me, and I don't want to pick on little Mr. Radcliffe, but this Mr. Radcliffe is 5'5", which isn't very tall, but they surround him with all these other actors that are really tall. So he's constantly looking up at everybody he's interacting with.
Oh, really?
But it's not his fault that he's short, but Tom Cruise isn't much taller. But Tom Cruise knows how to, block his scenes, so it gives him the illusion that he's on the same plane as people that he's interacting with. With Daniel Radcliffe, he's constantly, even to Toni Collette, who plays his boss, he's just looking up at her. It's bizarre. It's like he's a child.
Mm. So they don't use the Alan Ladd solution.
That's what I was going to say. They didn't put him on a box?
No.
Or put the other people in a trench?
Yeah. No, and maybe they should have. It's not his fault that he's short, but it was very distracting. But it's not a very good movie anyway. And even the title, Imperium, what does that mean? It's one of these titles that you have to go look up the word in the dictionary to see what it means. The word's never uttered in the film, so that's kind of pretentious. Apparently it means absolute power, so I guess it's a reference to the power struggle that the white supremacists feel that they're in. Like I say, not a very good movie. I'm not sure if it's still at the Keller or not. It was for at least 2 weeks. I'm not sure if they held it over a third week or not. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. If not, I'm sure it'll be out on Blu-ray.
How do you find out soon. What's on at the Keller?
You have to look it up online,
it's
right?
It's not even on movietickets.com, the Keller. You have to actually go Google Keller 8 Cinema or something like that.
It's an Eland Theater? Erland?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's a chain that I'm not familiar with. That's their only outlet in St. Louis is the Keller.
Yeah, they used to be.
It was
Werenberg
back in the day. It was the first run cinema. They used to have sneaks there. I saw a sneak of The Crow there back in 96 or whatever. Or 94, whenever that movie was made.
Yeah.
And White Man's Burden with John Travolta.
Yeah.
A sneak of that.
95 or whatever.
Yeah, I remember seeing a sneak of that at that theater. So I really don't recommend Imperium. Let's move on and review something else. I think all three of us saw Complete Unknown.
Hey, come on. You completely disappeared for 15 years, and then you show up, tell this crazy story, and run out the door.
Did you guys both see Complete
Unknown?
Did you see that, Jim?
Yes, I didn't know you saw that, Lynn. You got a screener of that? Okay.
I got a screener of it, too. I reviewed it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com.
Got you. My screener.
That's right. I reviewed it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com, and I gave it a whopping 1 out of 5 stars. What a snooze this movie is.
I might have been a little more generous, maybe 2 out of 5. What do you think?
I think I gave it 2 out of 4.
Okay.
Yeah. Just for the actors,
Yes, that's the only reason I gave it that high, and that is what I said in my review, was two powerhouse actors couldn't really save the plot, but they're worth watching. But what a dreadful...
Yeah, did you get the feeling, I was thinking about it more, that this may have been intended as a stage play?
It's very structured as in a theatrical way, but it raises more questions than it answers. The plot shows you her duplicate life, but it doesn't really explain much.
No, well, you wonder if it's going to be like, what's the Leo thing?
Oh, Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, is she BS'd her way into these jobs, or is she legit? And there's actually kind of a plot twist near the end that sort of explains it, but that doesn't really make any sense. You know, if she's legitimately a nurse and legitimately a teacher, et cetera, et cetera, doesn't she... Wouldn't she have to go to school and get a nursing license? And I guess she must have. So why would she bother, like, stalking this boyfriend from 15 years earlier? And why on earth? And she's obviously an interesting character. They set up this sort of interesting character. Well, why would we want to see that character in this situation? Frankly, you said exciting actors. Michael Shannon is a complete dullard in this film. And he's an exciting actor. He's always unpredictable. He's always good. I've never not liked him in a film until this one. I care less about this character. I care less that these two people connected. Nothing that they talk about is interesting.
Well, I think that the reason that she came back was that she had some feeling for this guy, you know, that this old boyfriend, which happens, and she goes about making sure that she was going to meet him. And I don't know, was she perhaps hoping that he wouldn't recognize her? Because he immediately does at this party.
That didn't make any sense.
That I haven't seen any reviews by the end of the film, you get the impression that the Rachel Weisz character is somewhat admirable for going out and taking risks, but I just came away saying, what a selfish person.
Yes.
Because they do mention that, Michael Shannon's character mentions that her father on his deathbed was pleading with him to tell him where her daughter was, or where his daughter was. You know, she changes lives without acknowledging her family, and, you know, she, you know, leaves her, you know, father to die not knowing what has happened to her, and it's incredibly selfish.
And then she just keeps leaving people in the lurch, and that's not admirable at all. And then when they go to this dance club for his birthday, do these people look like they go to dance club?
That scene was really poorly made, because he's got this wife, and she's a perfectly lovely person. You don't know if she goes to the dance club with him or not. I actually rewound the screener. I go, well, did the wife go to the dance club? You see Rachel Weisz go, oh, let's go dancing. So then you see Michael Shannon in a car with two or three of the people from the party going to the dance club. Then there's a scene at the dance club, and they run into more people from the party, but you never see the wife at the dance club. And I even wrote in my review, well, all of a sudden he leaves this dance club after being there for 5 minutes with this beautiful woman. Wouldn't the wife, like, be texting him every 2 minutes?
She is texting. He's looking at his phone.
She texts him once.
But I guess he turned off his phone.
Well, and then he comes home. It has to have been 3 or 4 hours later, and she's sitting in a chair drinking wine, and she doesn't say, where the hell are you? They just start talking about something that they were having a discussion about at the beginning of the movie.
And I kept thinking all the time, like, that poor wife, where is she? And what's she wondering? Yeah. Like, he's out with this other woman all night long. And then the other people that are at the dance club, it's like they're wondering, like, well, where are they?
Well, what's funny is that people at the dance club, she trips up her story, and they immediately are at her throat almost. Yeah. She was like, oh, we know you're a liar. And what was the deal with the big frog montage at the end?
Yeah.
That was just kind of ridiculous. It's like, let's show a bunch of B-roll footage of these frogs.
That was where she worked, because she said she was a frog researcher.
Yeah,
and you think,
oh,
that's ridiculous. But then it turns out she really is a frog researcher. And then they go to her office, and I guess that was some sort of climate-controlled...
Yes. Simulation.
Yeah, that was connected to her office.
Tasmanian.
But you never see them enter that room. You see them put on these suits, these protective suits, and then all of a sudden they're in the woods with these trees, and first I was like, well, where the hell are they? Just got off the subway in New York. And then I said, oh, I guess they're in some, but they don't, it's really poorly made, and it's boring, and nothing they say is interesting. They talk really slowly. There's long pauses between each word. It's really a bad movie. It's one of the worst movies I've seen. It didn't like get under my skin and bug me. It wasn't obnoxiously bad. It was just dull.
Not Louis Drax bad, you mean?
No, it's not, it's not fun to make fun of like Louis Drax.
Because you like these actors.
It's just a snooze. Well, I usually like these actors.
Well, yeah. You always hope they're going to be in something good, you know?
Right. Well, Rachel Weisz is going to be, well, has been in a couple movies this year because of The Light Between the Oceans.
Yeah.
And then she's going to be in Denial, and she's getting Oscar buzz for that.
Yeah.
And then this, well, so you're
glad to
see her.
It's not going
to
hurt her career. But,
well, you're glad to see her back on screen because she was kind of MIA. And then Michael Shannon's had a really good past couple of years. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, Midnight Special, he's so good in
that. It's not their fault. It's just a boring, lousy script. Their agent should have handed it over to him.
It's written and directed by Joshua Marsden, who did the film Maria Full of Grace, which was a
much
big
better
indie
film, yeah.
hit.
And lots of TV since then. I looked him up on IMDb. But this isn't a good screen or big screen comeback for him, that's for
all
certain.
Right. So let's move on. I really hated Complete Unknown. Jim and Lynn disliked it as well.
Disappointed.
Yes, disappointment.
Okay, one more movie to review, and that is Blair Witch. Blair Witch opens Friday.
Legend said there's been a curse on these ones.
Do you believe in the stories about the Blair Witch?
You guys are seeing it, tomorrow night?
I wish.
Don't get too scared. It's pretty darn scary. I saw it last week. It's a sequel to the 1999 mega-hit Blair Witch Project, which cost $30,000 to make and made $100 million this opening weekend. There was a sequel to The Blair Witch called The Blair Witch 2, I believe.
The Book of Shadows,
as
I recall.
The Book of Shadows, yeah. But that didn't have much to do with The Blair Witch. This one is a direct sequel. It's about this fella.
The brother of Amanda Donahoe from
yes,
the first film?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and she was... Was her name Heather in that?
Yes, I believe so, yeah.
I thought her name was Heather Donahue.
Oh, yeah. Is it Heather?
Yeah.
Oh,
I think Amanda Donahue's from Lair of the White Worm.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, I'm thinking of her, but I think of her all the time.
So it's a sequel in the sense that he says there's this couple that live in the woods where his sister disappeared 15 years earlier, and they had found some videotape that the earlier people 15 years ago didn't find, and they upload it to YouTube, and this guy sees it, and he swears he sees his sister in like one brief frame, so he's determined to go out to the woods and find his sister. So he brings along three of his friends, and then they find this dude who had found this tape and uploaded it to YouTube, and his girlfriend. So there's six people to go out into the woods, which is twice as many people that they had in 1999. Twice as many victims, I should say. If you like the first Blair Witch, you're gonna like this. It's more of a remake than a sequel, to be honest. And it is good, though. I tell you what, they know what this guy, Adam Wingard, directed it. He did Your Next, and he did The Guest, which we saw.
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
Yeah.
But they recreate entire scenes, like when they leave the campsite and they're lost, and then they walk for hours and they come back. Oh, they're at their campsite again. That was from the first one. The ending is almost identical to the first one.
Creep me out.
Yeah, but it still gets under your skin. There's a lot of jump scares and loud noises, but it's unrelenting. It's actually quite terrifying, I think, especially, you know, maybe the second half. It's not a very long film. It's only about 82 minutes long.
Better video equipment, I take it, than the
yeah, more high tech,
slicker,
and you don't know exactly what's going on a lot of time with the handheld camera. Which I think in the first one sort of worked to its favor, but I saw it with my friend Marianne, and she's like, well, what was with the flying saucer taking off? And I'm like, what are you talking about? There was no flying saucer in the movie. But you see bright lights and things like that. You also glimpse a monster or a demon or a witch, maybe, which that was one of the strengths of the original Blair Witch, is it's what you didn't see that terrified you. And in this one, they kind of go there. You know, it's pretty subtle and pretty vague, but it's definitely there. You see this demon or witch or whatever the heck this thing is that's haunting the woods. But I, if you like scary movies, you're going to like The Blair Witch. If you didn't like The Blair Witch Project in 1999, which a lot of people did, and that was a very divisive film, you're not going to like this new one any better.
Is it better than The Witch, though?
No, it is not better than The Witch. No, The Witch is extraordinary.
Yeah. I think why it was so divisive is because the hype was so heavy
part of it,
on that, and people expected it. And then some people really can't take that shaky cam.
Yeah. This one's not as nauseating as some of the ones I've seen. And that one was really a groundbreaker. I mean, it wasn't the first handheld movie, but in the past 17 or 16 years, how many handheld found footage horror movies have we seen? That's the one that kind of started it all. But this, again, this new Blair Witch, is there's nothing wrong with it. It's actually quite good. So I'm not writing the review. I think Michael Hafner is over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. But if I were to write the review, I'd probably give it, 4 out of 5.
Yeah, well, I won't be seeing that. This week I'm seeing Bridget Jones's Baby.
Oh, Bridget Jones's Baby.
I'm going to miss Bridget Jones's Baby because I'm going to be at the Fox scene, A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder.
I bet Bridget Jones' Baby's ugly. Anyway.
I did like the first Bridget Jones, but the sequel wasn't very good.
It's a busy week, isn't it? Yes. Tomorrow afternoon, you guys seeing Snowden?
Yes.
Yes. Seeing The Hollers tomorrow morning before that.
Right. John Krasinski directed.
Yes. It's got a very good cast it. It's got Charlton Copley, known for comedy. Charlie Day, very well known for comedy.
Yeah.
Richard Jenkins and Anna Kendrick. So
and Margot Martindale, I believe, is the mother in it. I guess it centers around her being ill and all the kids coming back. So I'm kind of looking forward to it. So,
we can come back next week and review that. Aren't you seeing something else tomorrow?
Well, seeing Hollers, Snowden, and then Bridget Jones tomorrow. But then this afternoon, we're seeing Magnificent Seven, which comes out the 23rd.
Magnificent Seven.
Which they're not using in the trailers. Ridiculous. So.
They better have it in this movie.
They better.
Denzel better come through for me.
I'm not looking forward to the Magnificent Seven.
Well, I don't know who's playing the Charles Bronson character.
I don't think they're recreating those characters.
No. It's just using the title.
All different ethnicities. Of course, Bernard O'Kelly, wasn't that his name?
He
was the Latino Irish name.
Yes.
Bernardo O'Reilly, that was his name in the original Magnificent Seven.
Anton Fuqua being behind the cameras gives me a little bit of hope, but we'll see.
I don't care about remakes. People always say, what about this remake? Doesn't it bother you that they're remaking this movie? I say, I call them as I see them. Some remakes are fine, but this one, for some reason, bugs me.
It doesn't impact the original at all. The original's still great. It's not going to change it, so what the heck?
True, but in the original, it was itself a remake of The Seven Samurai.
And then it was remade as Battle Beyond the Stars.
There you go.
And it was also a TV miniseries, wasn't it?
It was a series, a regular series.
So we'll be back next week to review those and probably some other stuff. All right, now we're going to talk about stuff going on locally here in St. Louis. I'm speaking at the Missouri History Museum tomorrow morning as part of Johnny Rabbit's program. His theme this month is The Streets of St. Louis. So I offered to talk about movies that were filmed in St. Louis, but Johnny can only give me about 10 minutes this time. So instead, I'm going to pay tribute to Mel Stein. Movie-wise, Mel Stein is but a footnote. He played himself opposite Steve McQueen in the great St. Louis bank robbery. Mel Stein was a St. Louis police officer who, when the Southwest Bank at the corner of Southwest and Kings Highway was robbed in 1953, he was parked in his police car just a block away. He raced over there right as the four thugs were leaving the bank, and he shot the ringleader dead, and he was the hero of the great St. Louis bank robbery. And then 5 years later, when Hollywood sent a crew to the Southwest Bank to film the movie with Steve McQueen as one of the robbers, Mel Stein played himself. Mel Stein died at the age of 102.
Quick question about that movie, Tom. Was that actually made for television, that movie, and then got released to theaters? It was always originally in theaters and for theaters?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. And the Southwest Bank, on the anniversary of the bank robbery, used to play it in the lobby for years and years and years.
Which
seems a little bizarre. Hey, there's our bank getting robbed.
That's such a great building, though, at that corner.
Yeah, they're talking about tearing it down. It's not called the Southwest Bank anymore. So I'm going to talk about that, and then I'm also going to talk about a movie that was filmed here in St. Louis in 1978. You guys ever heard of this movie called Delirium?
No.
Delirium was this cheesy, sleazy slasher movie that was filmed on the streets of St. Louis in 1978. Joe Pollack is in it. He plays a reporter that shows up at a crime scene. But the reason I kind of chose it to talk about it is because the movie, most people have forgotten. I saw it at the drive-in back in the day, and I own it on VHS. That's the only way you can find it. It's long, long out of print. But there's a lot of exteriors, and there's a lot of really interesting outdoor shots of St. Louis. There's the driving up and down Market and Kings Highway and Highway 40, and you can see the arch. I mean, then you see all these 70s cars and these 70s fashion. It's just a very interesting time capsule of St. Louis in the late 70s, and I've always liked this movie a lot. It's called Delirium. Seek it out if you can, but it's not easy to find. So that's tomorrow morning at 10:30 at the Missouri History Museum. And I'll be speaking again at the Missouri History Museum for much longer. I have a whole 90-minute program I'm doing there on Wednesday the 28th at 7 o'clock. It is my tribute to King Bagot. Lynn's going to that, aren't you, Lynn?
I hope so. I hope so.
Okay, Jim saw. I did this before. I did it 2 years ago as part of the St. Louis International Film Festival. This King Baggett was a silent film star from St. Louis who was huge. 100 years ago, this guy was the biggest movie star in the world. He's the only movie star from St. Louis to have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, but not the St. Louis Walk of Fame. Doggone it. We need to take care of that. He starred in a movie in 1913 called Ivanhoe, a version of Ivanhoe that runs about 48 minutes. It's one of his very, very few films that hasn't been lost over time. It's pretty good for 1913. A lot of movies from 1913 and before are so primitive, they're sort of hard to sit through. But this one's kind of lively. And it will be accompanied by music, live music, I should say, by the Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra.
And they're fabulous.
They are fabulous. And they write their own scores. I've worked with them on several projects before. They're great. And I will be delivering a illustrated PowerPoint lecture on the life and career of King Baggett. What I'm going to do is I'm probably going to talk for about 20 minutes, and then the Ivanhoe sort of falls right about in the middle of his career. So then we'll show Ivanhoe with the live music, which I say runs about 48 minutes. And then I'm going to talk probably another 20 minutes after that. So it's going to be a full 90-minute program. That is free. That is Wednesday at 7 p.m. Wednesday the 28th of September, I should say, at 7 p.m. at the Missouri History Museum.
I do remember you having that at the SLIF. And it was very popular.
It was. It was very well attended. And it got a lot of good publicity. And this one's getting a lot of good publicity, too. I was in the print edition of the Post-Dispatch last weekend. Joe Holliman's column.
I saw that.
Yeah. All right. What else is going on locally? Speaking of Gene Wilder, Jim just said he saw the double feature. What was it? Blazing Saddles?
It was Willy Wonka and Blazing Saddles at AMC Theaters, I think, through this next weekend, too, I think.
Oh, okay.
It's a two of them, Chesterfield and the West Olive.
When we were back on here 2 weeks ago, I of course, host 16mm Double Feature Night, and I said in October we were going to show The Entity and Terror of Tiny Town, and then I got home and found out that Gene Wilder had died. In fact, I think they announced that 2 weeks ago on Monday.
Yeah, it was.
So we've scrapped that idea, and we're going to do a 16mm tribute to Gene Wilder on October 4th, which is Tuesday, starting at 8 p.m. We're going to show Blazing Saddles, which Jim just saw, but this is the TV print of Blazing Saddles, which we talked about at length a few months ago here on our podcast. It's a really, usually if you say it was a TV print when you're talking about 16mm prints, that's a negative. I would say with this Blazing Saddles TV print, it's a net plus because it has 12 minutes of footage that is not in the Blazing Saddles that you saw at the theater the other night.
Yes. So that's always a good thing.
And they, you know, there's no violence or nudity to cut out, but there's some language that's cut, and they cut out the flatulence noises and replace it with horses' names.
Horses' whinnies, yeah.
Which is stupid, but they don't cut out the N-word. I mean, they say the N-word about 25 times in Blazing Saddles, and for some reason, I guess, you know, they had to cut out up yours. That was the line they cut out, but they left the N-word in over and over again. So it's really an interesting TV print of Blazing Saddles, and the color's spectacular.
Yeah. Well, interesting to
see
that.
That'll be at 8 o'clock, followed by Hanky Panky, which I've never seen. Have you ever seen that, Lynn?
A long time ago, and
too.
I don't remember because I loved Gilda Radner so much, but I can't remember it.
Yeah, mostly I remember this incredible fight scene between Kathleen Quinlan and Richard Widmark.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of his last films, so.
Huh.
But they made
several movies together, didn't they?
Yes.
This is the first of three.
Yeah, this is the one.
Haunted Honeymoon, what was the other one?
A Woman in Red, but Gilda's got more of a small role in that.
Right, and he did write, Gene Wilder did write and direct Haunted Honeymoon.
Oh, yeah.
He did.
I don't think I've seen that, is that any good?
It's hit and miss,
yeah.
So Hanky Panky's the best.
That's where they met.
Yeah, they met.
Sidney Poitier directed Hanky Panky, this is the second time he directed Gene after Stir Crazy.
Which is fabulous. Yeah. We'll talk about that later.
Well, actually, I think A Film Series, which is another film series I host over at Schlafly Bottle Works the first Thursday of every month, that's what we're showing for October.
Is
Stir Crazy.
Okay. You mentioned that this Wilder 16mm double bill is on the 4th. The next day, Fathom Events is doing Young Frankenstein in theaters with a live introduction and Q&A with Mel Brooks preceding it. So that's going to be in select Fathom theaters. I know Ronnie's and the Gravois Bluff is running it.
And October 7th and 8th at the Tivoli, midnight, is Young Frankenstein as well.
Wow.
But they scheduled that before Gene Wilder died.
Well, you can't go wrong with seeing that movie again and again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a Wilder mania at the theaters these days, which is great.
Yeah.
Great. You know,
what a cast.
A couple of months ago, they showed Willy Wonka at the Fathom event, and I took my mother-in-law. We were the only ones there because Wilder hadn't died. Now that he's dead, you know, the theater.
Well, they charge a whole lot for those Fathom events, too.
I saw
they don't charge me.
I saw Willy Wonka in its original.
I did too.
Me too.
I was 9 years old.
Yeah. I was 8. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I loved it.
Oh, I don't want to tell you how old I was. Yeah. 17.
No, I was 13. I'm sorry. Okay. 13 when it came out.
It came out 71, right?
71.
Well, yeah. But it didn't, yeah, because I saw it at the Lincoln Theater in Belleville. I was 17.
Go. Speaking of Fathom events, Dr. Strangelove, starring Peter Sellers and George C. Scott and Sterling Hayden and all kinds of great actors, is this weekend. Actually, I shouldn't say this weekend. This Sunday night, and then they repeat it the following Wednesday at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Dr. Strangelove, that's one of the few Kubrick movies I never saw on the big screen, so I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's going to be a special intro or anything like that. I haven't mentioned, have I? No? Just Ben Mankiewicz talking before.
Probably. I mean, is there anybody even left alive from that cast?
Oh, gosh. It's
I don't know, but you got to see it on the big screen for a slim pickings scene.
I never have seen it on the big screen, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I haven't either, just on TV, yeah.
Yeah, and lots of other stuff locally. This Friday and Saturday at the Tivoli is Psycho.
Oh.
So I don't think I'm going to be there, though. We're doing a garage sale at my mother-in-law's house Saturday morning.
Yeah, but those are the same nights as Late Night Grindhouse?
Yes. That's what I was going to get to next. That's the same nights as Late Night Grindhouse. Andy, our buddy Andy over at DestroyTheBrain.com does Late Night Grindhouse. That's this weekend at midnight at the Moolah, and it is I Drink Your Blood.
Men become animals and eat their victims. I Drink Your Blood.
You ever seen I Drink Your Blood, Lynn?
No.
Oh, it's really good.
Who's crazed that? Hippies.
It's about hippies who eat meat pies contaminated by rabies. Oh. They all get rabies. I remember when I was a kid, in Castle of Frankenstein magazine, around 1973 or 74, it must have been 74 because the movie's made in 74, they showed these really gory photos of, you know, decapitated heads and Lynn Lowry licking this decapitated hand. And I remember, because Famous Monsters didn't show gory photos like that.
Yeah.
But I remember, I got to see this movie. And then about 5 years later, about 1978, they played it at the Holiday Drive-In, and I was so excited because I'm finally going to get to see this ultra-gory movie. And the print was cut. All the gore was cut out of it. It was like they cut it out with a pair of scissors.
Oh, my goodness.
It was really clunky. I was angry, and I didn't get over it for decades. And then finally, like 20 years after that, or maybe 25 years after that, finally Grindhouse Releasing came out with it uncut on DVD. So I finally saw the uncut version. And that'll be this week. And it's really good.
The uncut version's as gory as your young mind would have imagined?
Perhaps gorier. It's weird. It's a weird, trippy, hippy-dippy horror movie, and it's gory, and it's sleazy, and it's a lot of fun. So I recommend everybody see
those hippies.
Yes. Damn hippies. We showed On the Town this past Saturday morning at the High Point.
Good crowd?
Yeah, they always get a good crowd at the High Point. But, you know, the funny thing about that movie is I'd never seen it. But I always thought it was about these two sailors who have a weekend in New York. But it's not. It's about three sailors who have a weekend in New York.
Oh, just a day, isn't it?
Or a day. Yeah, you're right. It's a 24-hour period. This guy, Jules Munchen, poor guy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the posters from 1949, you see these three actors. But then if you look at the DVD cover or the Blu-ray cover, they just show Gene Kelly and Frank Sinatra. Like, they're the only two. It's like everybody's forgotten about this poor... I don't know who this Jules
Munchen is. Well, he did another movie with those two guys. He did Take Me Out to the Ball Game with them. But yeah, he's one of those character actors that pops up on TV shows and movies. Yeah. And but these were his big films, his big feature films.
Yeah.
They had several revivals of it on Broadway recently, like last year. And then in the earlier revival, Leah DeLaria of Belleville, who is on Orange is the New Black, she was one of the cast members.
Was she the cab driver in that?
She was the one who sings about the cooking. What's cooking?
Betty Garrett was the horny cab driver. It's like she meets Frank Sinatra, and within 2 minutes, all they talk about is getting him up to her apartment.
So
they get up to the apartment, they're making out for a minute, but then her goofy roommate who's played by that guy.
Alice Pierce from is it
Bewitched?
From Bewitched? The other woman, the first Mrs. Kravitz, Mrs. Kravitz.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And then she's supposed to be like the ugly woman, so I kind of felt bad for her character a little bit. Anyway, I don't know what they're showing next month, but in October they always show a horror movie, so.
Oh, right, you mean for the Saturday morning thing?
Yeah, Saturday morning. Last year we did a House on Haunted Hill.
Oh.
All right. Okay, I mentioned the Midnight Show with the Tivoli. I can now announce the remaining titles for the Midnight Show with the Tivoli, related to the Tivoli, we call it, for the rest of this year, because we always go through October and then take things off until April. September 23rd, Mean Girls.
Ah.
Do you guys like Mean Girls?
Yes.
Oh, you bet. It's great.
Yes, last Tina Fey.
Last time we showed Mean Girls, it was really crowded, so.
Yeah, it's a great film.
Oh, yeah. Tina, I want to be Tina Fey when I grow up.
September 30th, and I guess that'd be October 1st, is Aliens, the 30th anniversary of Aliens.
Terrific.
October 7th and 8th is Young Frankenstein. October 14th and 15th is Halloween, John Carpenter's Halloween.
Oh, so it holds up so well.
It's a good one.
And then October 21st, 22nd, and October 28th, 29th is Rocky Horror Picture Show. And they have the, what do they call it, the samurai electricians. These guys who dress up like the characters, and they stand there on stage, and they act out the movie while the movie is playing, which sounds really obnoxious. But I guess people enjoy it because they do that every time.
And they sell a sack of all the props you can buy in there. You don't have to bring your own toilet paper.
Well, they don't want you to.
They won't let you bring anything. They search everybody that comes in there. So. Yeah. And there's usually a big bin with like vodka bottles in it and stuff at the end of the night. That's it for local stuff. Although I've got some scoop on the St. Louis International Film Festival. That's always a big deal. All the scoop I've got is retro programming, though. Jerry Lewis is going to be in town that weekend of November 13th and 14th. He's speaking at the
He's going to be at November 12th, Family Arena. Tickets on sale now.
Yeah.
An evening with Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, but Cinema St. Louis is going to do some Jerry Lewis programming. And they're showing The Ladies' Man.
It's a pretty good one. Early 60s one. Yeah.
His new movie comes out next Friday, Max Rose.
Yeah, see if it gets in a theater here in town.
See if they show it to us. And there's a new documentary about Jerry Lewis. I think the Cinema St. Louis guys are hoping he'll come over and introduce, but they're not counting on it. He certainly won't commit to it. But they're gonna do this Jerry Lewis programming anyway, and maybe Jerry will tape something that they can show. They haven't quite figured that out yet. Also, we mentioned the Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra as part of St. Louis International Film Festival. They will be accompanying Fritz Lang's Destiny, which is a fantasy film about death and a woman who's trying to save her husband and has that Satan pops up and gives her three opportunities to save her husband. It's a pretty famous film, 1921. I don't know the date on that exactly, but that'll be part of the St. Louis International Film Festival.
Well, Jim and I will be heading up the St. Louis Film Critics Association's two awards juries, one for the Joe Pollack Award for Narrative Feature and the Joe Williams Award for Documentary.
Good. Put me on the narrative one this year. I was on documentary last year.
Okay.
Thank you. Also, Charles Burnett is a guest of honor. Have you heard of Charles Burnett? He's a black filmmaker. His most famous movie is Killer of Sheep.
Oh, yes, I've heard of that.
And another famous film he made is To Sleep with Anger with Danny Glover.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Okay.
Yeah.
He will be a guest of honor. But he doesn't have a new movie. I guess it's just a career retrospective thing for Mr. Charles Burnett. I've never seen Killer of Sheep or To Sleep with Anger. So.
I've seen bits of Killer Sheep, yeah.
Okay. And then I will be hosting an evening with King Kong as part of the St. Louis International Film Festival. I mentioned this a couple months ago. I saw a documentary called Long Live the King, which is all about the 1933 film King Kong. It's not about the making of it. It's about the influence it's had on popular culture over the past 80-something years. And we're going to show that, of course, double feature with King Kong from 1933. That'll be at Webster U. I don't have a date on that either. And I'm hosting a second event, which is Eyes of Fire. And that's a movie that was shot here in the Ozarks, not too far from St. Louis. And there's been a 35mm print just kind of sitting around. I saw it when it was new. It's a horror film. And Jim and I saw it a couple weeks ago. They actually ran the 35mm print to see what kind of shape it was in. And it was in fantastic shape. And it's really held up well. It's a very effective and terrifying, I think, horror film. It kind of reminded us of The Witch a little bit. So that's Eyes of Fire. So a lot of retro programming so far at SLIP. But I'm sure they'll have lots of new stuff and lots of foreign stuff and lots of local stuff. And
Oscar contenders, no doubt.
They always do. All right, I think it's time to pay respects to a couple of movie people who have passed away. Gene Wilder, of course. Jimmy, you want to talk about Gene Wilder a few minutes?
I found out from reading the Entertainment Weekly article that he took his name from Eugene, the character in Look Homeward, Angel, and Wilder from Thornton Wilder, playwright of our town.
What's his real name?
His real name is Jerome Silberman, and he grew up in Milwaukee.
Yes, that's right. He was part of the theater crowd there. I saw a retrospect that had some photos of him from there. But we're going to talk about him in the movies. His first movie is a great one. He had a small part in Bonnie and Clyde. Yeah.
He was the nervous hostage.
Yes.
The Undertaker, wasn't he?
Yeah, it turned out he was. That's why they got him out of the car. Faye Dunaway's Bonnie says, I don't want him in this.
Who is his wife?
I've seen that actress before. I can't recall her name offhand, but that was a heck of a film to start out on. Yeah. And then he breaks through with another great film, Mel Brooks's first film, The Producers, mm-hmm. when Gene Wilder was Leo Bloom, the hapless accountant.
Wasn't he nominated?
That was his only Oscar nomination for Supporting Actor. He did, I mean, not for acting, but he did get nominated for the script of Frankenstein.
Yes, okay. yes. But this is, I can say I mentioned in my my obit of him on the We Are Movie Geek site about what a great team player he was. And his first great team up is Zero Mostel and that, because they teamed up a few years later for Rhinoceros. But this was the first of his three films with Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
And between his next film, he did films like, well, we were talking about underappreciated films. Start the Revolution Without Me is a great film where he plays part of a set of twins with Donald Sutherland during the mm-hmm. French Revolution. Terrific movie. I saw a movie he was in many years ago, Quacks Her Fortune, has a cousin in the Bronx with Margot Kidder. Worth seeking out. Pops up on TCM all the time. Besides working with Mel, people forget he worked with Woody Allen
mm-hmm. yes.
in the great anthology film, Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex, where he's the doctor in love with the sheep. And then came Wonka. Willy Wonka in 1971, a classic, the first adaptation of Roald Dahl's great story.
We just mentioned Killer of Sheep. We could call that one Lover of Sheep.
It's true.
His facial expressions were so wonderful.
Well, you know, I saw Wonka again the other night as part of this AMC double feature. And what really tickled me this time is, you know, when the rotten kids are about to meet their fate, he just sort of nonchalantly is in the corner going, please don't stop. And he's like, go ahead. You deserve what you got coming to you. You know, that's okay. So that's a fantastic film. And then he teams up with Mel again for Blazing Saddles. Actually, he replaced Gig Young. I believe they shot for a day with Gig Young.
As the Waco kid.
Mm. And Mel Brooks, in a hilarious commentary track, says, hey, you kids starting to make films, I'll give you a little great suggestion. Well, you know, when you're casting an alcoholic, don't cast a real alcoholic as the alcoholic character. Yeah. Because Gig got really sick on the set. This was like on a Thursday. Mel talked to Gene the next day. And Gene says, well, I'll tell you, I'll take the red-eye flight. You can do the costuming on Saturday morning. And then Monday morning when filming resumes, I'll be the Waco kid. It's great. Yeah, so he really bailed him out on that one. So that was the second great Mel team-up. And while they were shooting Blazing Saddles, Gene said to Mel, you know, I'm toying with this idea about the descendant of Victor Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Yes, and Mel said, that sounds interesting. Maybe we could do something with that. And they did. They made a darn near perfect movie. You know, people ask me my favorite film, and I say that unhesitatingly that's my favorite film. This is his third and last teaming with Mel. From then, Gene went out on his own. He directed and wrote his first film after that, The Adventure of Sherlock Holmes' Smarter Brother, that also had Marty Feldman and Madeline Kahn. And then he did a movie called A Silver Streak, which was a big hit, sort of a homage to Alfred Hitchcock. And this was his first pairing with his second great team-up. Richard Pryor.
They had such great chemistry.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. And audiences really responded to it. Did several more films. A few years later, about 5 years later, he does Stir Crazy with Richard Pryor. In between, he does a Western called The Frisco Kid with Harrison mm-hmm. Ford, for goodness sakes. And then he gets his last great team up a couple of years later with Hanky Panky, which we talked about mm-hmm. a little earlier. Cindy Portier directed, first teaming with Gilda Radner. They would go on to do The Woman in Red, which Gene wrote and directed, which won an Oscar for Stevie Wonder for his I Just Called to Say I Love You song. Yeah. And then Haunted Honeymoon, and two more films with Richard Pryor. Followed. And this was a heck of a career. He started making movies mm-hmm. in 1966. His last movie
1991,
and it's been 25 years since then. So, you know, it's odd, 25 years making movies.
Did he do some television, though?
He did some television. He had a short-lived sitcom called Something Wilder for NBC in 1994. He did a couple of movies, murder mystery movies for A&E after that. Mm-hmm. But he was on stage in London in Laughter on the 23rd Floor, but that was pretty much it besides writing books.
He won an Emmy for Will and Grace. He was guest actor. Really? And yeah. So that was his last, I think that was one of his last appearances.
97 or something?
But interesting about the last film he made with Richard Pryor in 1991, yeah. Another You, it was also Richard Pryor's last movie.
Interesting. Yeah. Maybe that's why he stopped making films. Yeah. All right, well, so RIP to the beloved Gene Wilder. A couple other people died. Alexis Arquette, 47. I know who Alexis Arquette was. He was in Pulp Fiction.
Right.
Yeah, he comes out things. With a gun, and everyone says, oh, that's Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
He showed up in a lot of stuff. Usually as a transvestite, Last Exit to Brooklyn, Bride of Chucky.
And The Wedding Singer.
He was George in The Wedding Singer.
Okay, that's right. That was loosely based on
part of
George.
An acting dynasty that started with Charlie Weaver from the old Hollywood Square show, Cliff Arquette. Louis Arquette is his father. He's got two sisters in the industry the Oscar-winning Patricia Arquette and Roseanne Arquette.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to him. I don't think they've announced how he died.
Well, it sounds like it was a terminal illness his family was there.
Oh, okay.
And when he passed, but he was only 47.
All right, well, too bad. R.I.P. to Alexis Arquette. Joe Pulito died. Did I say his name right? Joe Pulito. He was in a lot of Coen Brothers movies. If you don't recognize his name, you'd certainly recognize his face. I loved him in The Man Who Wasn't There, where he was the fairy. And I love when he's sitting in a room with Billy Bob Thornton, and he winks at him, and Billy Bob Thornton says, "Are you coming on to me?" And he says, "Well, maybe." And Billy Bob says, "You're out of line, mister." Which is a line I quote all the time.
And he's a gangster in Miller's Crossing.
Yeah, is he in Big Lebowski? Did you see him in that this weekend?
Was he in Big Lebowski? I didn't watch Big Lebowski.
Oh, I thought you stuck around for it. Oh, no. And I adore him in The Rocketeer the owner of the airfield. He's terrific in that. But yeah, like four or five Coen Brothers. Yeah, Hudsucker Proxy's in. Mm-hmm. And Chud. He was in there.
There you go.
And he also, for TV watchers, he was Jay's rival on Modern Family. He was the other closet company owner.
Oh, yes.
So that was a great part.
Terrific on a series called Crime Story.
And he wasn't that old. I think he was just in his early 60s. So R.I.P. to him. And Hugh O'Brien passed away. Hugh O'Brien was best known for his TV work. He played Wyatt Earp for I don't know how many seasons on TV. But he was in a lot of movies, too. He's in The Shootist with John Wayne.
Yeah, he's in the final gun battle at the end of The Shootist.
And which was John Wayne's.
He's the father of the Twins, too.
That's right, Twins. And he was in Game of Death, which was Bruce Lee's last movie.
And he's subbed for Bud Abbott in the movie Fireman Save My Son. He and Buddy Hackett substituted for Bud Lou in that.
But he was old. He was like 92 or 93 or something that.
He did a lot of work with kids, teen scholarships, and he had this leadership conference.
Very rugged, square-jawed guy. I always liked him.
Oh, yeah. Great Western star.
Yeah. All right. So RIP to all those guys, Gene Wilder, Alexis Arquette, Joe Pulido, and Hugh O'Brien. And RIP to the show, because we're going to have to wrap it up, doggone it. We'll be back next weekend, and we'll review Snowden, and I'm sure we'll review some other stuff.
You know what today in history is?
What's today in history, Lynn?
63 years ago, Jacqueline Lee Bouvier married Senator John F. Kennedy from Massachusetts.
Well, there's a movie that won the best writing at the Venice Film Festival about Jackie Kennedy, as played by Natalie Portman, about the days following the assassination. It won best screenplay at
the Venice Film Festival.
It's called Jackie. With Natalie Portman as Jackie.
Hopefully
Jackie
we'll
Kennedy.
Get to see it.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, Emma Stone won Best Actress for La La Land, which is getting a lot of acclaim.
That's my number one wait to see this fall.
Best Film went to Nocturnal Animals, a thriller starring Amy Adams and Jake Gyllenhaal. So a lot of movies to look forward to, but seriously, we got to wrap this up. Lynn, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll be back next week, but for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Lynn Venhouse.
Signing off.
Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, black leather,
smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather,
ride. Bored in the battle there, chaps.
Oh, I guess I'm out.